This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a well-planned episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the forward-thinking Rich Early.
There's a lot of words I'd use for this podcast.
Before
well planned, those aren't on my list.
But we're going to be talking about some of the great, best laid plans that we have in store for people. So it all falls in.
I even like the double meaning of in store.
Yeah.
So, a little too subtle for the kids in the back row.
The kind of quality content that people tune in for. How you doing, Rich?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Doing all right. It's Friday afternoon. Done with the day job for the week. Pretty excited about that. And we are here at Paradox, and we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, it's an odd time as we record this, but we're really dedicated to just trying to make this happen. We had that gap in at the second half of 2019, and I don't know, here we are trying to make sure that there's a cast up every week. And what do you know what number we're on?
It's 282 or 283.
Okay, so we're a little ways out from the big 300.
We're still more than 15 episodes away from our next big milestone.
Sure.
So we have time to plan that.
Well played.
$10 says that we'll just get together over lunch one day and just be like, what do you want to talk about? I don't know. How about the number 300?
We can get Dan Green on and go over every Magic card numbered 300, which... Yeah. That'll be not a big list, because most sets are 260 cards.
So, yeah. Well, you know, when you guys did, what was that? It was 51,
51,
right?
Yeah.
Like, the idea was sound until you realize, oh, wait, it goes, like, every blue card, and then every, or it's artifacts, or however, so it's like every single
all
one of
exactly
these is going
out.
To be in the same color, and, it's like...
I was on that podcast, and I slept through part of it, because it was just, I mean... It was in my pre-CPAP days, to be fair, but, you know, it was really boring.
It's like the idea, when I first heard the idea, though, I read the description of it, I'm like, oh, that seems cool. And you start listening, and like, after like three or four cards, you guys all start kind of going, oh, wait a second. This maybe isn't going to work the way we thought it would.
We could have done every number 51 of every comic book ever printed.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so. Anyway.
For the future, 300 would work for that, because there are... plenty of series that have 300 comic books. You just have to figure out the numbering scheme.
And there's the comic book 300 that the movie is based on.
There you go.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Next level.
Entire podcast on 300.
I'm sure that's been done. So this is the Doxcast. We do a live stream version and then post it every Monday morning. And, here we are. So
right. We like to record in blocks. We try to get together... and do like three or four of them, so we record them and then release them out weekly. But like Rich said, to keep things going, make sure that we have them until we can get to the next time that we can record a block. We kind of do one-offs, and that's what today is. But we do have some cool stuff to talk about today, and namely that is we're going to talk some more about game day and some of the specific things we have planned for that. For those of you who are unfamiliar or need a refresher course, we started Tabletop Night back in
2011-ish.
Yeah.
It's right around the time we got the event center right away,
Yep. And so the first Saturday of every month, starting at 6 p.m., we had Tabletop Night. And it was just bring your games, bring your friends, come in as you are, and play games and have fun. And it was great. And it's been a stable for us. All these 9 years now, give or take. So back in February of 2019, first Saturday of the month, we started Fargo Moorhead Game Day. And the idea there was to present a full day's worth of events and open gaming rather than just having it limited to the evening. So we still had the Tabletop Night still kind of persisted just because that's what a lot of people are used to. That's what a lot of people enjoy. They do all their errands and other things during the day on Saturday, and then they would come in the evening. So that kind of that has still persisted. But we started doing game demos, trying to theme out months. So February, I believe our very first one was our Island Escape game day. The idea being that it gets, of course, very cold here in Fargo. And we had a lot of good games with Island in the title. And so we did demos of Spirit Island, Dinosaur Island, Forbidden Island, and then also doing some Dungeons and Dragons demos. And I believe that our DMs worked in some kind of islandish themes into it. And we continued like that throughout the year with a few notable exceptions. For example, in August, we did our Gen Cant event, our summer extravaganza. And while we still had demos going on, we also married it with some big events. We had a board game decathlon, as well as our first board game relay races. And game day has been a good event for us. We've learned a lot of things over the past year, and of course, we're still tweaking it. We're still working on making it the best thing it can be. Because one of the things that we've learned, and you know, stop me if I'm going off the rails here or in directions that we want to...
No, you're great so far.
But one of the things that we've definitely learned is that the role-playing games, the demos of role-playing games, so like I said, we started with D&D. We've had a few other months where we've worked in some random ones, like we did Star Trek role-playing game and Star Wars. And now we've got Starfinder. The Starfinder Society does a demo regularly, and our good friend Wayne does Dungeon Crawl Classics now on the regular. And those demos have done very well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, most of them tend to fill up, whether it's from people RSVPing on the website or just walk-ins who are coming through and, oh, you guys have an open seat for Dungeons & Dragons? I'll sit down and play. And that's been awesome. The board game demos have been a little bit more... what's the word I'm looking for? Inconsistent, I think. And it's kind of difficult. What we originally wanted to do, or I think the original concept was, if you go to a convention like Gen Con or Essen, you know, those sorts of board game conventions, a lot of focus there, you'll find demos going on all day. So you'll have companies that have their newest games that they want to demo and get people interested in, get them hyped up for so that they can either buy them there or get ready for the release coming up. You also have a lot of people who have designed their own board games who will book demo time so that they can get people interested in their games to get funding on Kickstarter or otherwise. And a lot of those demos are shortened versions of the game. Right, so you the publisher will come through and the designer or whoever, developers, will come up with a way of playing the game in a shorter period of time that still gives you a good example of how the full experience goes. So that way they can work in multiple demos into a day and get people a good experience. Well, when we started doing demos, it was very new. Our sign-up system was new, and we had some good response, but we didn't necessarily have enough people to fill up multiple demos. So we'd try to do a couple of Spirit Island demos, and then a couple of Dinosaur Island demos. And so what we're finding is we'd have like four people total, so you'd have like pretty much one demo to do for a game. And spreading it out and trying to work in, you know, we'd start at 10 a.m. and people really didn't start coming out until 1 o'clock, so we moved that time. And we started basically playing full games instead of doing a demo version of it, just because the response wasn't quite enough to warrant having multiple demos of the same game in the same day. And we kind of learned that the board game demos, I think some people appreciated them. Some people possibly even looked forward to them. But for the most part, I don't know that it was a major selling point of the day. I don't know that a lot of people were scheduling their Saturday around being able to play these games. And certainly part of it is trying to figure out what the hot game is and make sure you have it on your shelf so that you can get people the experience to play it and then go and purchase it. And I think Wingspan was the first one where we really kind of ran into this problem, because we were supposed to get it in either like March or April, I believe.
Yeah.
And then we ended up getting one copy. And so if we cracked that open to make that our demo copy, that's great, but then people couldn't buy the game, and then we wouldn't have that one copy to sell in the first place.
Yeah, so, and I mean, it was, I mean, the economics were, you know, if 100,000 people go to Gen Con, that's one thing. You know, if we're paying someone to demo or then essentially just play a game with other people, you know, for, which is awesome. I mean, it's not like it's a bad thing to offer. It just became,
right,
you know, the reward or the economics kind of clashed against the purpose, was, I think, the big problem, right?
Yeah, and then it became an issue where, so say we have a game demo that's available with four seats at the table, and if we're playing the entire game, only four people can play it. Other people could crowd around and watch and kind of get an idea of it, but rarely is that going to happen. So we have four people playing the game, and a lot of times people would sign up with one or more of their friends, which is, again, perfectly fine. They want to come and get the experience. But then if they decide to, if they like the game and want to purchase the game, we have to have copies on the shelf. So it's a risk on our part to order games that we have no idea if anybody's going to play the demo, and if they play it, they're going to enjoy it. And then you have this situation where you have, say, four players, three of them know each other. Not all three of them are going to need a copy of the game because they all play together anyway. So one person buys one of the, you know, four or five copies that we bought, and then we have more of the copies of this game on the shelf, which may be a fantastic game, but people aren't necessarily going to buy it. And so those were some of the issues that we ran into with the board game demos. And I'd like to find a way to do it that makes sense. Certainly there's less risk involved if it's, you know, if it's a known thing where we may not have this on a shelf, but if you play it and you want to, after you demo it, you can order it and we'll get it in, you get a discount or something. You know, those are always possibilities. And but part of the issue there also is that we were gravitating towards games that the demoers already owned, which also, again, not a terrible thing. I have a pretty decent collection, but, you know, I'm reaching back in October and playing, I did a demo of Ghost Stories, which is one of my favorite games, and I'm happy that I got a chance to play it with other people and give them a chance to experience it, because some of those games are classics. But it's harder to convince somebody that they should buy a classic game when there's so many other new ones coming out. It's like, oh, I never had a chance to play it. Now I played it, it's off my list. I don't necessarily need to play it again because my focus is elsewhere. And so there are just a lot of things to consider, to figure out as far as those demos are concerned. Whereas the role-playing games, as long as we have somebody to run the game, usually they have the books, and getting people interested in that, it's a lot easier for us to work around the idea of creating more role-playing events that can be ticketed. You know, so for example, we just did D&D for Dogs, which of course is linked to For Love of Dog Rescue, and that has a whole thing behind it for raising donations and such. But you can have a role-playing game like Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, and create an event around it where there's a table fee to come and sit and play.
I mean, yeah,
you do
and then
it
there's
every
some,
Wednesday night,
and then there's some economics around it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for D&D for Dogs, all our DMs volunteered. They wouldn't have to. We could do it differently, you know. But that makes it so about 90% of everything donated goes to them. So we raised about $2,300, you know. Mm-hmm. If we had to redirect some of that money to paying DMs, we can do that. It would just take away, you know, just change the event a little bit. Right. So, but that is different than free D&D on a Saturday you know, at the beginning of the month, which also has its own benefits. But I think making sure we know who's coming to that and why, you know, or things like that, or like making that table all new players, or, you know, like there's a philosophy there that, you know, no one who came I have any problem with. So I'm trying to put this, you know, in a particular way. But, like, it's one thing to do that for free as an investment from us if it's all kids and families that have never played before. Mm-hmm. If it's people who come play every Wednesday night, it's awesome. I don't regret doing it. But those are different outcome-based things.
Yeah.
So that's all. So.
Right. And that is the idea, is to give people a chance to try it. Everyone, I think, knows about Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
It's in popular culture. But not everyone has the opportunity to try it, because even getting just a player's handbook is a $40 investment, give or take, depending on where you purchase it and if there's sales going on and such. And then someone has to learn the game, which is an intimidating prospect. And then they also have to have know people who are interested in playing, and get them to get together, teach them how to play, and then run and learn it. So having just the learning experience, or the trial experience for something like Dungeons & Dragons is potentially a costly risk on the part of the consumer. You know, if you try it out and then you find you don't like it, or you don't know anybody else who wants to play, this gives you a chance to actually get your feet wet and try it out, rather than just having an excuse to sit down and play.
Now, honestly, D&D is so popular right now that we are basically going to be forced to go to an extra night of D&D during the week for Adventurers Leagues.
Oh, wow.
We are at about max capacity, so this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about after we do this, too, and logistics and things, and, like, we're working on some revamps to our webpage and so on and so forth that are all going to be, I think we'll just try to tie some of these ideas together along with announcing, you know, the expansion of Adventurers League, you know. But, you know, one interesting thing is I met a young woman from Ada Bora School, who is running a D&D event, D&D club. And she didn't know what to expect, but she had 45 kids show up for her first meeting and ended up with 20 signed up to actually play. And so I, you know, one great thing about having a community is I was able to connect Taylor from that to Sarah Holm, one of our DMs here. And Sarah was just still, like, beaming, because she was featured on the news article on D&D for Dogs on WDAY. And so, but it was great to have, you and I or John Layton could talk to her, but it was great to have a young woman who was also learning her way in the DM realm. And it just shows, like, if someone believes in you and you can make the right connections, how it can change your life. And it, like, everything about it was just exactly what I want our events to be, you know. So
yeah.
I was very excited.
Oh, that's awesome. And so in terms of game day, we're finding that continuing with the role-playing games is an easy fit. The tables tend to, if not fill up, they get a good amount of people playing. The people running those demos are getting something else out of it. For instance, Starfinder Society. If you're not familiar with Starfinder, it's basically the space version of Pathfinder, which is a fantasy-themed role-playing game that's based off of an older Dungeons & Dragons system. So when Dungeons & Dragons moved to 4.0, Pathfinder kind of broke off and did their own thing. And I could be getting that somewhat wrong, but you get the idea.
Yeah, you're pretty close.
And so there are people who really enjoy Starfinder, and they've got a group they call Starfinder Society. There was Pathfinder Society, which I assume is still going on in some capacity, but they wanted to grow their ranks. And so they come in and run those demos, and that's a chance for people to try that system, and hopefully they enjoy it, and they get involved with Starfinder Society, which bolsters their numbers, builds that community up. It's a really good fit, and it's a really great thing, and I think we have no qualms about continuing the role-playing game demos during game day. the board game demos.
Especially when we've got like a community leader or a game champion for a particular game, you know, and they're able to devote their time because their goal is to build their community, you know, which is ours too. I don't mean to imply ours is not to build, but
it helps if someone's passionate about it and they willing bring that to step up. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, you and I, we can't support or do everything ourselves, you know, so we need those people who are willing to step up and do that. So
exactly. So that's kind of the state of game day as it is. We're still planning to continue it. We've got some great ideas for, again, some themed events. But in terms of, like, the board game demos, those are probably going to really roll back unless we have some very special things to demo.
And we do. I mean, we like that, you know, right? We have a couple of ideas coming up on the horizon.
Oh, absolutely.
But then they'll be a little more event-ish instead of, here's four different things to come and demo, right? So
right. And, you know, for those of you listening, if you enjoy the demos or you like the idea of it or whatever, and let us know. We'll take that feedback and do the best that we can. I think as we get going, especially as we're going with some of these Kickstarters, which we talked about last time on our podcast, and that one's currently up on the website if you want to go and listen to that, would absolutely, with some of those like Blood on the Clock Tower, they are giving retailers a demo copy of the game along with whatever you Kickstarted, whatever you pledged. So absolutely, when that comes in, which should be August of this year, they're projecting now, we'll definitely run some demos with that and possibly some events. And Return to Dark Tower, if we happen to hit the threshold and they have a certain number of copies, if you purchase that many with the store, they'll send you a free demo copy as well. I would love to get one of those because that's going to look really imposing and draw people in if that's set up on a table. So we've got some other things like that. I don't think the idea is to completely abandon board game demos. It's just we're going to be a lot more deliberate about which ones we do and when we do them. So on any given game day, you might not see a board game demo available, but they're not completely gone.
Yeah, that doesn't mean there'll never be one.
Right. And even this month, so actually tomorrow, if you're listening to this live, it'll be posted after the fact. But February 1st, the game day, it is, since it's the anniversary, we wanted to do at least a couple of special things. And I'm planning to run some board game relays in the evening, as long as we get some people who sign up or show up and are interested. But during the day, I'm going to be available for open demos on any of those games that we're using in the relays. So the idea is, hopefully, if you're interested in playing in the evening when we do those, but you need a refresher course or just to straight up learn one or more of the games that we'll be playing, I'll be available to teach them to you throughout the day. So we don't have events for each one on the calendar with RSVPs and stuff like that. It's going to be very casual, very open. Just come and sit down, learn the game. If there's people who want to learn other ones, it'll maybe be a little truncated. It's like, okay, you get the idea of how to play that. Let's pull this one out now, and so on and so forth. So we are doing that. There is opportunity at this February game day to demo some games, but they are games that have been out for a while. A lot of people are very familiar with, and that's on purpose because we want people to be able to play in the relays, and you need to know four different games if you're going to play in the relays. So that's going on. And then just a quick shout out there too. Sign up for the board game relays. We need at least 8 people in each one for them to fire. So hopefully you find it interesting. It's a fun concept. It's playing 4 different games with your team. Basically, you play one game for about 5 minutes, and then you get up, take your teammate's seat at the next game, play that for 5 minutes, and so on. So it's fast-paced. It's a lot of fun. We've had some good response with it, and that's why we're going to present it here and probably continue to do more in the future as we set up some of these events. So
one of the good things about the scheduling with it for this one, whether, I'm going to pretend that it already happened. It was a huge hit, Josh. That was terrific. But I think one of the things you did really...
turn people away.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you did really well is by putting it at night, you made it so that even if people don't know about it, you know, they might be there for tabletop night already. And so, you know.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, and that's part of, part of the thing that we found is that people show up around 6 o'clock or so for tabletop night because that's what they're used to. That's what they like. That's when they have time. And so if we put more of those events in the evening, that's hopefully more of a draw.
Yep.
So we'll see what happens. But I think we should go ahead and start looking ahead to 2020 here and some of the ideas that we have, because we've actually got quite a few of the game days. If not fully solidified, we have the concept mapped out for what we want to do on that particular
game. Oh, yeah. I mean, we effectively have the whole year, right? You know, except for one, I think. So, all right. Well, I'm going to give you... I'm going to give everybody the brief overview of the schedule, then we'll come back and talk specifics. But and we used to debate about this. Did they need to be a theme event? Do they need to, could they just be their own thing? And there was always people in our planning meetings who saw it both ways. And so that led to, you know, some schizophrenia sometimes about that. So, but, you know, so coming up March 7th, and that's the one I want to come back to and talk the most about for right now, it's called It's Your Turn Game Day, and it's an accessibility event. So we're going to have gaming for, you know, all our sighted friends, but we're also going to have gaming for blind and low vision users and potential players, as well as kind of introduce you to playing games from an accessibility standpoint and do some fundraising for the NFT. We'll get back to that in a second. April is only slightly up in the air because we have two. I've wanted to call April 4th April Ghouls Day all year. Like, I was so excited about that. And we're looking for, we love Arkham Horror, so we're looking for a day for a big Arkham Horror event. So that's going to happen, whether it's exactly on April 4th or later in the month, it's going to happen. Because the thing that came up now is one of the games we're most excited about this year is called Half Truth. So, if you get, Josh, have you ever watched Jeopardy?
I believe I have, yes.
Have you heard of Ken Jennings by any chance?
The name rings a bell.
How about, have you ever played Magic the Gathering?
Magic the who now?
Yeah. So, you've probably heard of Richard Garfield, the guy who created
He hates Mondays.
Yes, and he loves lasagna.
Yeah.
That's that friend Nermal. Wait, no, he doesn't like Nermal.
Right.
What? No. So Ken Jennings and Richard Garfield went in together and created a trivia game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean that's going to be terrible. Clearly,
there's the elevator pitch right there, and I guarantee that's all you need to hear.
Yeah. No. Like, right. So we're really excited about that, and we haven't done a game show night for a long time. So Josh suggested that might be the game to bring back a game show night. So we're not quite sure how we're going to break those events down yet, but that's going to be April in some form or other. So May is Free Comic Book Days on May 2nd. So last year we did a superhero theme. Again, similarly, I don't know that we know exactly what we're going to do, but we know that it will be tied into Free Comic Book Day. Critical Role has a free comic that day, so I think likely...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know, and the D&D book based on their setting will be out by then, too, so... You know, my first gut is that that's something we play off of, right?
Yeah.
So, June...
Last year, just to go back on that, it was actually on May 4th. So we did comic book-themed board game demos in the day, and then we had Star Wars-themed game demos in the evening. So that was a long day.
I can't believe that was that long ago already.
I know, right?
I feel like that just happened. So.
Yeah, very odd. Anyway...
Side note, when you finally get... long-term planning, life seems to fly by faster to me. Like, because, and it's good because we're not just bumping our head into stuff. But at the same time, like, I'm already thinking about August, you know, or whatever. And then August is here before you know, because you just contextualize your life differently when you're actually thinking about all those things. Hate to bring you into that. Hate to bring you down. So, June 6th is our only one that's kind of wide open right now. Like, one of the things about the first Saturday in June is it's basically CorCon Hangover. And maybe we could call it that, you know.
That's not a terrible idea.
It isn't. You know, I don't know exactly what it is, but we might, you know, maybe just embrace it, basically, right?
So, yeah.
July 4th, I'm actually getting excited about, and I think... Some planning and ideas need to brew into this day sooner rather than later. But July 4th is actually on a Saturday. from a Magic the Gathering perspective, the core set releases that weekend. The pre-release is the weekend before. So I know we're going to bring back Nerd Dependence Day. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to have a Magic the Gathering component. But I also know a lot of board gamers don't play Magic, so it'll be more, you know, it'll be something else as well. And so I'm really actually starting to look forward to that and think maybe it'll be kind of cool, like, as a, for thinking about it now, and can maybe break that open. Now, are we going to stay open during fireworks? Are we going to do it, you know, shift everything more to daytime? You know, we'll have to decide all those things, right, for right. July 4th. So then you go to August and we're into Gen Cant. Mm-hmm. I think Gen Cant was a good success last year. We're going to build off of it.
Yep.
Then you go to September and it's our Back to the Books event going on. We did games based on books last mm-hmm. year with varying degrees of success. That was actually perhaps our most well attended game day, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it actually, I recall it doing quite well. I think. Of our board game demos, I don't think we had anyone for Hardback, because we did that game, but I ran, Ex Libris, did, and Stuffed Fables.
Stuffed Fables, yep.
And both of those did very well, had some good people join on the demos for those and enjoy playing.
Side note, poor Stuffed Fables. I had to sell that game off finally at 75% off on Black Friday. And it did then finally move because at, you know, mm-hmm. like $20 or $15, it became a good value.
More
like,
relatable, yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole... The problem with that game is not the quality of the game. The mm-hmm. problem is it's kind of a one-time playthrough at a really high price. And yeah, so...
Well, and it's... a lot of production into miniatures, which are great. I mean, they're fantastic miniatures. But for a game that is really best played with your family, you know, and even younger children, those pieces are fun to look at and touch and play with, but most families don't necessarily care that much about, you know, the component quality versus the cost of the game. If you say, hey, this is a great game to play with your kids, awesome, I want it. Oh, it's $70. Then suddenly it's like, I don't know.
And maybe if they had done it at, let's say they could have gotten it done at $30 or $40, right?
Yeah.
Then they could have done sequels very easily because they could do a different storybook every time. Or, you know, you could have created... and maybe that was the idea. So once the minis mm-hmm. existed, then the expansions could just be new storybooks using the same minis. And they may have very well planned that, but yeah, their price point unfortunately hurt what was otherwise like a fantastic game.
Such a good game. I mean, it's amazing. We've talked about it a number of times, and I'll happily tell you if anybody is wondering why it's such a good game. I'll go on about it for quite a while. But... regardless.
Yeah. Well, in one other thing, I want to come back to September in a second too. But October is going to be an Extra Life kickoff event, and then November is going to be Extra Life, and then December is going to be what I think you have gotten off and running as a hit, the holiday,
White
Wampa gift exchange. I was going to say elephant, and then I almost said heffalump, and I'm like, I know that's so wrong. But
eventually.
Yeah, Oliphant. No, wait, Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy Oliphant exchange.
What do they call them in Return of the King? What are the big creatures at the end? They're not elephants. They're not Oliphants. They're like, it was really close to that, right? If anybody's watching and can think of that, help us out. But going back to September, you know, we've already started doing our Extra Life planning for the year, so it is possible. A lot of things are going to be different about Extra Life. We love Extra Life, and actually, if they're going to be different, it's only going to be because we want to get more enthusiasm back in. Last year's was fantastic. I mean, I had a great time, but our attendance was down, and I want to see our attendance grow and just some enthusiasm go back in. So they do a tabletop appreciation weekend that we don't have a date for yet, but it may very well be that this year that's a bigger part of our Extra Life marathon. We may break the marathon up into two pieces and some other ideas that are on the table. So stay tuned for that. So, but I mean, that's, you know, 2020. I know a couple of those sound a little more vague. They're not that vague. I mean, we know what we want to do, and pulling them together isn't going to be all that difficult as the time draws near. So
yeah, well, and I think, you know, just reiterating that for the foreseeable future, we are still planning on doing RPG demos. So you can expect Starfinder, Dungeon Crawl Classics at each one. We need to find a willing DM to jump in for Dungeons & Dragons if we're going to continue those. Although, it's hard to say, with as well as Dungeons & Dragons is doing, it's almost easier to direct people to an Adventurers League night and just go with that.
Or I think if we do it on a Saturday, so like if we, you know, so let's we talked about this philosophy a little bit on a podcast already, but the idea, I think, behind everything, why Extra Life was a good day was because everybody who was there was not just there to game, but they were there to be a part of doing a good deed. You know, they were to help people. And so in 2011, like when you talked about game day, tabletop night opening, it was more than enough just to provide the space and get people together. Mm-hmm. In 2020, that's you can do that. You can do that at home. You can do that at conventions. You can, I'm not downplaying game day at all. You know, it's still a vital thing. But I think what has worked best is when you're coming for a purpose. And that is the focus of 2020's biggest events for us is putting the idea of doing good deeds together in the real world, like D&D for Dogs. You know, we had to play D&D all weekend, and we raised $2,300 doing it. You know, and the store had a pretty good sales weekend. Everybody was happy. The store did get a lot of attention for that. We empowered some people. Like, again, Sarah Holm went from not DMing to DM and is now, you know, like, I just think all kinds of good things happened at that event, you know. So that's where we're headed. And there are events that we're working on behind the scenes that aren't even in that schedule yet. I have a Cops and Firefighters gaming event in the works. We are talking about, with the autism community, of doing an autism game day. And more things can be on the table. And just this week, okay, this I'm not going to say out loud, but like I came up with inadvertently, the idea was out there and it came across my desk, a way for us to do a charitable thing we've never done before through the website that, I mean, I, you and I haven't talked about this in person, but I cannot tell you what a good idea I think this actually is. So, anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
so.
I do, and I agree. I think it's going to be...
It's a game changer. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a game changer, and it's an achievable game changer. Sorry, gang. You know, a lot... So... And those of you who know me, like, I'm an emotions on my sleeve guy. When I'm depressed, you know, when I'm happy, you know, when I'm excited, you know. But a lot of the times, the way the store works is I come up with an idea that's something we can't possibly do, you know, or is way too ambitious and so on and so forth. And then John Swenson, who's our manager, you don't know much, like, he's the concrete, down-to-earth, you know, stuck. Sometimes I feel like stuck in the mud, but I need him, you know, because he pulls my balloon down before it floats away, you know. But for once I've got an idea that is achievable with the technology we have and the resources we have, and is going to combine all the things we have been talking about. And I think, yeah, I really do think game changer is possible, you know, with how big a thing that is. So, but yeah, so let's talk about things we can actually talk about. sorry, everyone.
Well, and one thing I want to point out here is that our focus with a lot of this, you know, when you're talking about 2011 Tabletop Night and what that meant, that was community building.
Oh, yeah.
That was, you know, forefront of this big board game boom. And a lot of people there were far fewer games available than there are now, but there's still, that's the era a lot of the classics really, you know, really great games came out. And this was an opportunity for people to not only play those games, but find other people who played those games. You know, we didn't have this big board game group. A lot of the people existed, but they didn't all know each other. They didn't get together and play. And so that's one of the things we're talking about now, is that this was the hub for that. People came to Paradox to find games, to find players, and really do that. Now that we've all kind of found that, and we have all of our board games, we're very well educated on all the ones that exist, and what we played, and what we like, and what we don't like, etc. You know, it is very easy to say, well, you know, let's just have everybody over to my house. We can sit on the couch here and play. Have some beers or whatever if you're like to drink while you play, because you can't do that in the store, rather than going out into the world, and especially during the cold winter months when it's hard to justify leaving the house. You know, so what we're doing, though, and what we've been discussing for probably a couple of years at this point, is how to continue to build that community. So we have a good foundation. We have a really good foundation. And, you know, we want to bring new people into the store. Yes, partially because it's a business. We want to do more business, get more people in for that reason, but also to continue to grow the community and get our board game passion out there. Well, that's all well and good, but the way I think that we're approaching it now, by building the community, by including people who maybe don't think they can be part of it. You know, it's not just people who aren't aware of it, because that was one of the things, like, how do we get it out there? How do we let people know that, hey, these games exist and they're fun and you should come play them? Now it's looking at it and saying, well, you know, we're connected with the NFB, and how do we, or what's the story here? Can blind people with low vision play board games? And if so, why aren't they playing it? You know, and so it's more now that we're starting to reach out and try to find those people who, just like we were back in the day, you know, people who didn't know they could play these games. We're trying to open the door for those people now who don't know that they can play. And that's why, one of the reasons I'm really excited for this this event here, for this game day coming up in March.
And I think, I mean, yeah, so I think, you know, there's even a crossover between blind and low vision people and a lot of the nerd community. And that is, there's so I learned, you know, the NFB is the National Federation of the Blind, and I'm a board member for the North Dakota state affiliate. So one of my jobs, at least for now, is the fundraising chairman. I'm acting fundraiser. I will not be the permanent one, but we have very few members. So right now that's my, and you know, the, so, you know, like, I'm going to do what I know. I know how to run a gaming event, and I know how to fundraise through a gaming event, although we're trying to find some unique ways to do that, right? But, you know, those are extra life as not just me. Our organization knows how to do those things. So, but the things that drew me to the NFB were, number one, the motto of the NFB is live the life you want. Now, that's directed at blind people, but how many people listening to this or, you know, buying comics, playing board games, whatever, are not, how many of us are not living the life we want for any number of reasons, you know, like our anxieties, our depressions, our fears, or, you know, our timidness, whatever it is, right? So, like, I think something that we've always tried to do is bring people across the line to join a community, you know, to find their people. That is what having Tabletop Night did in 2011, right? That's mm-hmm. what the conventions, that's what ValleyCon and CoreCon and Anime Fargo and FM Comic Con, they all do that. They give people a way to get out of their comfort zone and go see if there's a place for them. And so the words low expectations, I think, fall on both groups to no small degree. And so live the life you want by overcoming your low expectations. So in our tagline is like raising expectations. And so there's a lot going on at this event. And as we sit here, we can't tell you every detail of the day because we're still brainstorming those. And we actually have just made a really cool partnership too. But we want you to know that you can cross the, like you said, you know, you can come out, you can do these things. And with blind people, it's that they need to know that, like, I didn't know this. I've been terrified of many things. But, you know, like, there's nothing a blind person can't do using an accessibility tool in the same way. I always make the example of, if you needed to go over to the bookshelf and you couldn't reach the top shelf, you would grab a stool and reach the top shelf. You would never think to yourself, I'm ashamed to grab that stool because I'm too short. you know, blind people do that all the time. We think to ourselves, well, I don't want to have a cane, or I don't want to show people I'm blind. That's embarrassing. Well, whatever. It's getting a stool and reaching the top shelf, right?
Right.
That you're using an accessibility tool in the same way. And that can be, it can be really fearful. Sighted people, I think, are often very afraid of blind people because they represent a really bad disability in their mind, you know, not to use a judgment word too much, but, and so it can be intimidating. You don't want to think of yourself going blind and what that would mean. Well, guess what? it means the same as if you're short or if your hair is brown. It's a characteristic of who you are, not the end of your life. And so that's what, as we build this thing, whether this year is, you know, this year is step one towards what we want it to continue to be, right? And so, I don't know, we're very excited about putting this together, so.
Yeah, and something to consider is that as people age, eyesight is one of the things that is affected. So whether or not you ever fully go blind or whatever, at some point in your life, you may experience problems with your vision. And if you want to continue, I mean, who knows what you'll be doing when you're 80 or 90 years old. But, I mean, I don't see my love of board games going away.
Yep.
And as my family, my grandchildren, their children, whatever, I'm hoping that I can share that love with them as I'm old, when I get older, and you know, so this may be very relevant to me, maybe not right now, but years and years on down the line, I might be in that same spot where I'm effectively blind or low vision, and then
Well, and so there's an interesting, you bring up actually a really good point. So if you want to say, if you want to talk about actual blind citizens in the United States, it's about 2% of the population. So that's a very small number, realistically. It's still a lot. It's a lot of people,
right.
But it's, you know, realistically, it's not something that most people are going to directly deal with, right? One out of, what, 25 people, one out of 40, I don't know. What? Oh, one out of 50. No,
I'm not,
I don't know.
I'm not good at math.
I'm not good at math either. Me. That went to hell real quick. 2 out of 100. Let's put it that way. That's one out of 50. But now, though, if you talk about what you're talking about, macular degeneration and that kind of vision loss, yeah, it skyrockets to at least 10% of the population now. So very realistically, you or someone in your family is going to face, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's still 1 in 10, but I mean, it changes a lot, you know? And it's not unrealistic you're going to encounter somebody who's suffering from that kind of vision loss. And that is actually one of the things we talk about in the NFE a lot. That can be the worst because, you know, I've been blind since birth. Like, whatever, it's old hat, right? But, like, if you're used to being sighted and lose sight, it's terrifying. And and you may not have any resources or any support or anything that tells you where to go. You know, I mean, most eye doctor's offices don't even have literature teaching you where to go. Or, you know, things like that. Like, or, you know, you'll get directed potentially to the School for the Blind or something like that. But, yeah, like, our job is to... You know, our job is to inspire you. Our job is to make sure you can live the life you want. And it sounds stupid because it's like, what are they talking about? People are just going to show up and play board games. Yeah, you know what? Like, that is as vital a part of your life as going to work is. You know, it's what if playing a game? What if we reach, you know, one blind person on March 7th who doesn't have a lot of faith in themselves, and we put a little faith in them, and they have a great night, and now Monday morning. You know, an opportunity that they would have passed on, they take because they're in a good mood. You know, like that, that's how small it is. Everything you do impacts somebody around you. And you know, one tiny thing could, I mean, I emailed these people from 64 Ounce Games who were excited to partner with. I didn't get a response to an email. I messaged Lance Mikes from Undead Viking because he and I did a Kickstarter when they did, or did a video when they did their original Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And he was still friends with them. And he reached out to him. I sent him a second email. And then we got on the phone today. Well, Richard and Emily Gibbs. Emily is a member of the NFB of the state of Texas. And all of a sudden, just like, wow, you know, like my mind just got blown, right? And I was open to the idea that I could accomplish that, whereas it would be easy to just be, they didn't respond to my email, I give up, you know, and stuff like that. So that's all we're talking about. So I don't know. I mean, it's just exciting.
Yeah, and I really hope that we get a good response from the rest of our board game community here for this day as well. Because this isn't just about giving blind people the opportunity to come in and play games. It's about coming together and playing games together.
Yep.
Because essentially what we're working on getting are some of these, there's accessibility kits for some games. That's what 64 Ounce Games does. Is they create these accessibility kits for various games, whether it's card sleeves with Braille on them or, you know, various bits and pieces. So they take a game like Pandemic, which is a game that just about everybody who plays board games knows, and makes it so that it is accessible for people who are blind or of low vision to be able to play it. And that means that we can all sit around the table and play it together. And that's incredible. And I really hope that we get a good response here from both sides, you know, from people who are sighted and people who have those blind or low vision issues for March 7th. But then I would just be so happy if in April on our game day, one of those, at least one of those people comes back and comes and wants to play games with us, whether they come with a group of their own friends or they just come to game day, because there's no reason that they shouldn't be able to do that.
Yep.
I mean, right now, yes, a lot of board games, most board games require sight, or at least some degree of sight. Like, Rich, you can play some board games by using a magnifier to look at various cards and board state and stuff like that, but yep. Some of them, with as complex as they get, it's very difficult to take in.
Yeah, the games I have the most success with are generally card-based games that I can read a magnifier with, or that would be easy to imagine a Braille alternative to the cards as well. But, you know, mm-hmm. I'm curious on Pandemic, you know, how do you make the Pandemic board work? You know, throwing, putting Braille on the board and having the lines be raised and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very, very curious to see how it works. But that's the idea, you know, is to bring these people into this community and, like you said, to raise those expectations and say, there's no reason you can't do this.
I'm kind of focused on something you just talked about. When you talked about, it was kind of funny because I was going to make a joke about, you know, self-interest in case I go blind. But that's really, it's actually very important. So one of the things that I was talking about with 64-ounce games today, and there's an element of this that we don't talk about a lot, and I talk about low expectations a lot, but I don't talk about this other one, is that there is any disability has a stigma to it. No one wants to be deaf, nothing, right? Blindness has a particular distasteful stigma to most people. I think it scares people in a way that some other things don't necessarily scare them. Mm-hmm. Because sight is so vital, because it's so critical. It's the idea of not having it in a world like ours. You know, I don't get to see the new Star Wars movie or, you know, read a book or whatever, right? Yeah. I mean, I think it is a particular one. And so, I mean, I have some fear that people might stay away from the event because of that stigma. I have, you know, people are like, well, I don't want to be around blind people. I mean, hell, I didn't want to be around blind people in my past, you know, because I was ashamed of myself. And so why would I want to be around more people? Or I would want to deny my blindness or things like that rather than embrace it. So, I mean, there really is something there. So if we do get people to challenge themselves who might be uncomfortable about potentially being around blind people, well, guess what? If you've been in the store, you've already been around one. Sorry, hate to break it to you, but you haven't caught cooties yet, you know. But secondly, that would be breaking expectations too. You know, that would be getting you to cross over and challenge yourself to do something that might be difficult for you to do. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think we ended up using most of this podcast on the schedule and then that. So, I mean, probably don't need to go any further, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, just as far as game day itself is concerned, just I think it's good to put out there and just let you all know, those of you who are tuning in and listening, that game day is sticking around. It is still going to be changing, evolving. And even though, you know, there are going to be some of these more high-profile events, it's still going to be game day. You can still come down, bring your games, play with your friends, do it like you normally do it. You don't have to donate. You don't have to participate in the board game relay or, you know, whatever. It's still, the core of it is still open gaming. And we want you down here. We want you playing. We want that community to continue to thrive. And hopefully, through some of these efforts, it'll start to grow again. Or grow larger, because I don't know that it necessarily hasn't ever stopped growing, but certainly, you know, well, we've talked about it before. We don't need to go into all of that.
Oh, like everything evolves. Everything evolves and changes. It's just the way life is, and it should. It's good. I don't, you know, yeah, I mean, there's a part of me as the owner that would love, you know, 175 people to still be trying to fit into the game room from 2011, but I think we'd be pretty stuck if that was the case. You know, I think, like, we wouldn't have, none of us would have really grown or changed or anything, and I don't think that's what we want. So.
Right, right. So we hope that we'll see you on game days, and of course, pay attention to the website. That's where we put all of the information for these things coming up. We do have blog posts up there for our current game days and looking ahead. By the time this posts, of course, you'll be looking ahead to March 7th at least. So go and check that stuff out. We do put events up on the calendar with RSVPs so that you can save yourself a seat at a demo. And as always, we are open to thoughts and suggestions. We really do hope that this opens a door, not just for the blind and low vision community to play games and to join, but also for future events, ways that we can reach other people that maybe don't think that they can come out and do this, or, you know. So if you're listening to this and you know of some group or have something on your mind in that regard, let us know. I mean, we can't guarantee that we'll be able to do everything or reach everybody, but we want to get to as many people as we can, and we want to be as accessible as possible.
I think that is, you know, look for, let's try to set a goal, Josh, that first quarter of this year, we're going to have the a revamped page on our website that's all dedicated to this, right? Mm-hmm. Like our tentative name for that page is Community, with the idea I had the other day, I'm wondering if that name isn't quite right now, but, you know, it may still be. But I mean, you know, and I like what you just said, because it's like, we are going to have a place on the website for you to pitch charities to us. And pitch partnerships to us. So that's going to happen. And maybe that should be the next page. You know, we revamped our Magic Gathering page, that one, and our D&D page needs help. So, <Yeah. laughs>
Yeah, so stay tuned, everybody. We hope that we'll see you on game day. We hope that we'll see you on all of our streams. We have lots of great content and things going on, big events at the store. And you can catch all those ParadoxCNC.com. We'll get you to our event calendar and blog posts and all that good stuff, so you can learn more about all of that. We are on Facebook, Paradox Comics and Cards. And we're on Twitter, at ParadoxCNC, ParadoxCNC on Instagram. And, of course, we're right where we've always been, at 26 Roberts Street in Fargo, North Dakota. So stop on by, say hello, and hopefully you can... play some games with us.
It's year number 27, so Batman's going to show up this year.
Yeah. You never know when, so come down to the store. He might just drop in, and you don't want to miss it.
I gotta use that in some way, because like 28 and 29 are like nothing, right? So then 30 is good, because that's another marker, but, you know, 26 years of 26 Robert Street, 25 and Batman, Detective Comics 27 was the first appearance of Batman. So, like, we can play off of that, but then we're screwed for the next 2 years.
Oh, I'm sure we'll think of something good.
Adrian Peterson Day.
Yes. All right, folks. Thanks again for tuning in. Like Rich said, you can find these DoxCast episodes on our website. I post them up at some point on Sunday, so they're definitely up every Monday. And we hope that you'll tune in and enjoy that. And we'll see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time.